Hi everyone, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. You know, one of the biggest questions I get on the show is, what exactly goes into a business exit plan and when should I start creating mine? Well, I always tell people that the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know. You can get it free by texting exit plan with no spaces to 44222. That's exit plan to 44222. Again, text exit plan to 44222.
Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Well, hey everyone, thanks so much for joining me once again today. Pleasure to have you with me, and you know, it's always great to have guests come back and update us on what's happening in the world, in their business. And in this case, today we have back with us Dave Willens from Impact Sales Coach, and he helps people build a revenue stream that allows you to exit your business on your own terms, and has a new book out called Growing Rainmakers that we're going to talk about today. And Coach Dave has educated audiences on professional sales and the magic of sales management for the last 20 years, and he's been working with people all over the country. We were just talking. He says he's been talking to people all over the world lately in his virtual format and his coaching, and he's been sharing his message through public speaking, consulting, coaching, and again, his new released book, Growing Rainmakers. And the coach believes that successful sales managers put systems and processes in place, set solid expectations, hold people accountable, focus on growing people, and then base it on all on his simple formula for success. Coach Dave, thanks so much for joining us again. Good to have you back.
Hi, Bill. Glad to be back.
Dave, tell us a little bit about your 20-year career, how you got started in this line of work, and just what you've been just give us an update on what you've been helping people do lately.
Sure. Well, I got started when I was young. I started my first business right out of college. I had a mentor that helped me learn about sales and how to handle a business. Grew it to about 30 salespeople over the next 20 years. I retired, retooled, and relocated to California in 1997. Started coaching in 2000 as a Vistage speaker, EO speaker, YPO, and I got to the point where I wasn't making enough of a difference in people's businesses, people's lives, so I turned to coaching. I figured out how to bring the message right into the company and grow Rainmakers, basically through a sales management program.
And I love that title of Growing Rainmakers. We're going to talk about your book a little bit later, but, you know, that's something I think that most of our listeners can relate to. It's like, you know, I need my people to feel like they have an important purpose here, and help them develop as well. Now, I know you and your team have been busy hosting virtual workshops and virtual sales mastermind groups recently, and you have something called Coffee with Coach. Let's talk a little bit about those issues before we get into the meat of our conversation today. How do your virtual workshops, virtual sales mastermind groups, and Coffee with Coach work?
Well, when we launched our virtual programs about 4 years ago, it was slow going, all except for the Coffee with Coach program. That took off immediately because it's set up for individuals that they can work on their own challenges, share their successes, get feedback on where to take it to the next step, how to plan things. And so that program's been growing and growing, and it's an hour either once or twice a month that people sign up for, and they get me and all that comes with it, so to speak. Workshops were working, but not to the level that they were once the pandemic hit. I had a number of workshops scheduled. To give you an idea, I had a client coming in from Canada to Anaheim, to their office down there, And we were going to spend 5 days, 8 to 10 hours a day working on this program. Instead, we broke it up into bite-sized pieces of 2 to 3 hours a week, and we're able to drive home way better results with it. And we include the Coffee with Coach program with our workshops. Thought we were going to launch public workshops where we could just have people join. I don't have any time for it. Companies have come in from everywhere. This morning I was on with a group from the Netherlands, six people, plus a sales manager, plus their marketing person. So it's really good for my business. And what I'm finding is that the businesses that I'm working with, we found ways to actually help them grow their business, and sometimes with unbelievably great success.
That's great. You know, we talked about this a little bit before we came on too, is that you were ready for virtual. A lot of times it's been some of our clients, our customers, who weren't quite, you know, they were kind of forced into virtual almost a year ago now. But now, you know, people that were set up for it like you are now starting to realize those dividends. And one of the things that we talked about earlier was, you know, a lot of people are starting to think, you know, now it's been, 8, 9 months, and they're starting to think, we may not want to go back to how it was before. Are you hearing that from people that are now engaging with you virtually?
Oh, absolutely. I was on a call with a rep from Uber that runs part of their HR program, and they're going into a hybrid situation at many companies like theirs, where the people want to stay home and do work maybe 2 to 3 days a week and come into the office 2 to 3 days a week. At that company, they've figured out that right now they need 1.4 desks for every two people that work there. It's kind of an interesting way to look at it. And the world's changing, and it's changed fast. I mean, the GE CEO Bill Walsh said, you know, if the outside world is changing faster than you're inside your business, you're in trouble. And that's the truth. We have to adapt and have to do it quickly.
1.4 desks. So get out the measuring tape and the chainsaw and get to work, people out there.
Yeah.
So hey, let's talk about the magic in sales and sales management. You have a method for that. What's the method to the magic in sales and sales management today?
Well, I could summarize it in a couple of ways. First, I could talk about the simple formula for success that I use and I use for sales managers. It's attitude plus skills plus activity will get you success. Not attitude or skills or activity, but plus. There are five key areas of focus that you want to do when you roll out a team with that kind of formula, and that is that you want to recruit and hire the best people, and what a wonderful time it is to recruit and hire people right now. You want to start them successfully. Well, that's where a lot of companies stumble. How do you get them started right out of the gate and get them productive within 90 days? Then you provide training and education in everything from your product to your industry to your customers to how to sell to the sales systems and processes to what to expect from the marketing team and inside. And then you have to continually give them growth and development. Give them room for personal growth and development, and they'll love you. And the fifth key is just to keep the best people. You got to get the best in, and you got to keep them. So we work on those things first.
Yeah. You know, I think we've all heard surveys from before, pre-COVID, that said that a very small percentage of your employees are engaged in work, you know, really effective. And if you can increase those numbers, then, boy, you'll see a significant change in your business. And is this just the perfect time to make those types of changes and invest in sales teams? And with the pandemic and especially with what you said, the step one, recruiting and hiring, being able to hire people that may not be dependent on so much as where they live as to how they work.
Yeah, it's a great time for that. You know, the way I look at it is most of these salespeople that are doing B2B sales, they had travel involved in their territory, whether it's driving a car somewhere for an hour or 2 hours, or if you're in LA, sometimes 4 hours or the Bay Area, or getting on an airplane and flying across the country or whatever. And that's basically taking 2 days out of your work week. And we don't have to do that anymore. Our customers don't want us to do it anymore. There is some good reason to visit customers when this is over, but it's mostly for relationship and trust building. Other than that, a lot of customers don't want to see their salespeople coming in the door anymore.
Well, yeah, for a variety of reasons, COVID-related and other, but as you say, this translates into a huge amount of additional productivity. If especially, you know, we live in California. Hey, it's busy. It's pre-COVID, it was busy on the freeways. Now it's starting to get busy again. But you know, it's tough to get around. It's tough to make more than a couple sales calls a day, if that. So if now all of a sudden those same productive people can be making 4, 5, 10 calls a day, meaningful, they can double their production. What are some of the other changes that you tell business owners they should be looking at making in with their sales teams these days? What are some of the big ones?
Well, first of all, you've got to train people to do things in this new environment. So you can't have somebody get on their virtual computer screen and talk to somebody and their face is blacked out, or you're seeing the top half of their head, or they don't understand how to utilize the systems that the computer has to offer through multiple screens and things like that. Or you hear a whole lot of noise going on in the background. They don't have clear microphones, that kind of thing. You have to look at your teams and really do an analysis of who is adapting and who's fighting it. Who wants to learn more and who's fighting it? You know, I think if you launch a dynamic training program within your business, you should see changes within your people in 60 to 90 days. And it just kind of depends on your sales cycle a little bit, but you get a really good look at the players on your team. Long-term growth, we define it as double-doubles. You know, you're looking at double-digit revenue growth and double-digit gross profit increases, usually within 18 months if you've got a successful program in place. You'll see changes immediately, but you got to adapt and you've got to spend the time training your people.
Good point. It's time. I like that phrase, double-double. So doubling your revenues and doubling your profits in a period of time. How long do you think it takes to make a significant change in our sales with implementing and getting, you know, really getting in tune with a lot of these things? What's the turnaround from the point of, hey, yes, we need to start making some of these changes and we'll start seeing significant results?
I think you can make changes that'll start showing significant results in 60 to 90 days. You have a good sales manager, and if your CRM, your contact management or client management tool is in pretty good shape. Many of them are completely broken or have all the wrong information. It may take longer than 60 to 90 days, just depending. But I think you can gauge a company by that, and I'll know where they're at. Usually the first 2 hours that I talk to the sales manager or the owner or CEO of the company.
That's great. That's great. So you told me that you have a story about getting the right person in the right seat, someone who was a training for a customer sales rep and that was promoted to outside sales. Would you share that with us?
Sure. So this woman actually was the customer service rep manager for 3.5 years with the company. And she came up to me when I started with them back in December and said that she was interested in going into outside sales. And we talked a little bit, and I thought that she had some great ideas. She was a good person. She had the right concepts. So we invited her to join the team. We gave her a territory. They're in the supplement business. And so healthcare supplements, fish oil, flax oil, MCT oils, and flax products, you know, they provide the ingredients for companies. And I've worked with this company in the past, and I've been brought back a couple of times to spend time with them. So we started working together, and she really had no idea what sales was about. And we started working in March. Sometime around the end of May, she started making a little bit of traction. So again, it took that 60 to 90 day period for her to get in there.
Uh-huh.
She followed a simple process that we have for going after a new lead, cold calling, so to speak, following the process that we set up in the CRM for her to follow. And she ended up talking to somebody from one of the largest grocery stores in Canada. That's her territory. She's in private labels, and they are a really good connection for her. Well, doing the right thing, asking the right questions, she was invited to present to their five-day buyers meeting for their stores, and it's coming up in 2 weeks. So she had to put together a presentation. She was allowed 15 minutes, 10 minutes to present, and 5 minutes for questions. And we rewrote her presentation a couple of times, came up with two different presentations, one that she would give them in 10 minutes, the other one with all the details on it she'd send afterwards. She had to present that to the two leads in that department. There's about 40 people in their buying group. And she presented to them, and they said, "That's fantastic. We can't wait to see you." And they scheduled her in for the first call on Thursday morning in 2 weeks.
That's great. That's terrific. That could be a life changer for her, right?
Oh, it definitely could be. And she's shown other things, but that's just one of the stories with her. I actually nominated her as the sales professional of the week for the month of last month, and rolled it out this week.
That's terrific. Now, you know, one thing that's impressing me with that is that, and this is a question I guess I'll ask you. I was thinking that you mainly talked with business owners about their sales teams, and I know you do that. But do you also get calls from individuals like that who say, "Hey, yeah, the company's great, but I want help. I want to sharpen my saw as a salesperson in today's environment." Is that something that you also do? I know you do that, but do you get calls directly from salespeople as opposed to or other professionals? Everybody's in sales in some way or another, or other people directly, as well as the business owners. You see what I'm getting at there?
Yeah. 70% of my time is spent with individuals like that. 70%. Probably 70% of my revenue is made from the companies that hire me to come in and do the workshops. But
sure,
70% of my time is spent with the individuals. And most of it is being coordinated with their sales manager. Because I talk to each sales manager for people like that on a weekly basis. However, there are some individuals, probably 20% of my clients are just individual people that have met me through the years, have read my book, have seen us online, and they end up signing up and spending either an hour or 2 hours a month on the phone with me.
Okay. So for those of you listening, and again, that was a mental little barrier breakthrough for me, Coach Dave. Sorry about that. It took me
no
all
problem.
This time to figure this out. But for those of you who are listening, if you're generally business owners listen to my show. It's Exit Coach Radio. But if you have salespeople directly that you'd like to maybe offer coaching with Coach Dave, that might be a nice perk to offer some of your best salespeople. Of course, I think Coach Dave would rather work with your whole company and get you up to speed on everything. But there's a nice little stocking stuff for Christmas gift, didn't it? Hey, so share with us, if you will, a couple tips. You have a couple of tips for our listeners today about how they can hit the ground running with improving their sales efforts here in November 2020.
Absolutely. You want success in your company so that when you're ready to exit as a business owner, you've got a strong sales team so that somebody doesn't want to come in your business and pay top dollar and they have to do all the selling. That's just not good. So what you want to do is start out and just reset the expectation for today's environment. What are they going to do every day? And put those things into that formula for success. What do you expect out of their attitude? What skills do you expect them to learn and grow in? And what activities do you want them to do? I try to break it down into kind of 9 criteria to define attitude, 9 for skills, 9 for activities. And that will produce a great set of expectations that you can talk to people about and hold them accountable on a weekly or a semi-monthly basis.
Now, one thing that you've told me in the past, again, is to set MJE. What's MJE?
Yeah, minimum job expectations.
Beautiful.
We don't do that enough, MJEs. I'm glad you remembered that.
Yeah. Beautiful. Beautiful.
The shortest course in selling, Bill, I've always said, is to ask questions and listen. So why don't the business owners or the managers provide the sales team with a question guide that has all the questions in them that you might want to ask a customer? Teach it to them then. Practice it. It's an awesome way to build a sales team.
Yeah, I can't tell you, Coach Dave, how many times I have business owners that say, I'm really great at sales, but I hired this person, and boy, they're just not cutting it. Like, nobody can sell like I can. Well, why don't you teach them, right?
That's a reflection
on you if you haven't transferred that knowledge. Take some time and get them on the right path. It's always great, you have such a great way of communicating so many of these things, and I always end up with a page full of notes that are very valuable, I think, to anybody who's listening. I hope you also took notes, and you'll get in touch with Coach Dave. And one of your precautions that you wanted to leave us with, I think, about not panicking, I love the way you put this. Do you remember what that one was?
Well, if I rethought a lot of it. So you know what? You can't panic, but the reality is, the biggest mistake I see in smaller companies especially is that they promote their top salesperson into a sales manager. And you're losing sales when you do that, because it's not the job for the sales manager to make the sales. It's the job for the sales manager to grow salespeople. Bunch of horses
right.
go a long way compared to one.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. Well, one of the last tips that you provided me on the pre-interview was don't panic and don't sound desperate, as your people and your customers will sense this. And, there's a lot of great things going on right now, and I think you can hear that with what Coach Dave has been able to do with his clients, customers, and individuals who contact him. And the best way to get in touch with Coach Dave is ImpactSalesCoach.com. I'll tell you one more time, impactsalescoach.com, and be sure to look for the book Growing Rainmakers, because I think you can hear from the way he communicates that it's going to be an interesting read and something that we should all be focusing on as we move towards a new changing year. Coach Dave, thanks so much for staying with us today and joining me, and once again, and I always look forward to talking with you.
Same here, Bill. Thank you for having me on the show again.
All right. Thanks for listening. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to one of many shows on ExitCoachRadio.com. We're interviewing advisors, authors, and thought leaders for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. If you'd like to be a guest on any of our shows, go to guest.ExitCoachRadio.com. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
You're listening to ExitCoachRadio.com, the information station for age 50-plus business owners, where we're interviewing top advisors for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new one-minute tips every day. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
And now the Exit Coach Radio Show proudly presents the All-Star Review, a compilation of one-minute highlights from past guests. Hear more one-minute highlights and full interviews from these guests at ExitCoachRadio.com.
When your business value is wrapped up in your client list, what's the most important thing you can do to drive the value of your business? We asked expert Stacy McKibben.
If you don't have really strong, you know, client relation management tools, CRMs, as they're lovingly referred to, if you don't have tools like that in your business, it's going to be very difficult to transition it over. As a matter of fact, your next buyer is going to use that as a reason to drive down your sale price. Absolutely, one of the biggest areas of opportunity that we see in professional services businesses are going back to your existing and previous clients. Oftentimes, we just forget that they don't necessarily know the full breadth of services that we provide and how they can use us or even refer us to their friends and family. So that is a big win in most businesses, is just starting there. And it's very difficult to do if you don't have a good system in place with which to do it.
One of the most common ways a business is sold is through something called an earnout. And we asked for information and an example from business broker Chris Bond.
What buyers want to have happen is they want a seller to prove the actual value of the business by having them be patient and waiting for a piece of the payout. So in other words, once the transition period has happened, say 6, 12, 18, or 24 months, the buyer will make additional payments with the comfort that, okay, it is what you said it is. Had a very creative deal earlier this year where down payment was made for about 80% of the deal. A bank stepped in for a percentage of the deal. The seller actually financed another small percentage of the deal. And the earnout comes in years 3, 4, and 5. So everybody's pulling in the same direction, making sure the first 2 years go very smoothly.
What are some of the challenges for leaders in this knowledge-based economy? Here's CEO Coach Bill Anton.
The person that has the most influence over the entire organization is the person that leads the organization. And transforming that person exponentially influences change. My training as a psychologist, my understanding about the kinds of organizations that are going to be successful in the future are going to be organizations that realize that knowledge is their product and that knowledge can only be created by enrollment, not by compliance. And so the task of the leader of the future is to transform the people that work in the organization so that they want to give their best and so that they're willing to offer ideas and perspectives that create knowledge and innovation for the organization.
Medical insurance is a big part of your budget. How do you contain those costs? We ask benefits expert Rhett Bray.
We'll talk about wellness is how we can start to communicate the importance of the wellness and that we give the people and the employees the opportunities to do things that will help them to become healthier. We start to educate them on the importance of annual physicals. We start to educate them on preventative care. Women do this quite well. Men have a tendency to wait till body parts don't work and then they go, which can be late. And it's interesting. We take better care of our car. We change the oil. We see the light, the lamp light comes on, and for a lot of us, we don't do the maintenance that we should do on a regular basis. That will identify a lot of issues that people have that now you can start to address, either through medication, through exercise or diet. There are just a few key areas that you can identify that will drive these higher costs.
Okay, so we've heard the term before, treat your business like an investment. It'll be a lot easier to sell down the road. What exactly does that mean? We asked an expert, Don Berzin.
Many of us in the field encourage owners to look at their business as an investment. Some owners understand that concept, but many do not. I mean, for a number of them, they see their business as either a job, a cash machine, a passion, or an extension of who they are. And the term investment sounds a little too removed for them to relate to. And we also let it be known that a business is actually easier to sell when it has a passive ownership. I mean, an owner who is not personally critical to maintaining future cash flows. But let's face it, I mean, one of the last terms that ever come to mind when we think about most entrepreneurs is passive. You know, these people are doers, they make things happen, and sitting on the sidelines is not something that many of them want to do at any stage of their career.
at ExitCoachRadio.com. We're interviewing over 100 top advisors to get you one-minute tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new content daily at 6 a.m. and 1 p.m. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
Why would you have a revocable living trust instead of a will? Here's attorney Matt Amaro.
One of the main reasons that you would consider doing a revocable trust versus just having a will is avoiding what we would call a probate process, which is a court proceeding to distribute a family estate, which can be very expensive and legal fees, court fees, and just involves a lot of court involvement that can be pretty painful. So by using a trust, you can get out of that. Now, if your assets aren't high enough, that's one way you may be able to avoid probate without a trust. And the other way is you may have assets that are able to pass to beneficiaries outside of a trust and outside of probate, even if you don't have a trust. But when you have real property, you usually won't be able to avail yourself of those two exceptions to staying out of probate.
How do most people decide it's time to start exit planning, and what's on their mind when they do? Here's Jim Immel.
Long-term is really interesting. I use the analogy of the light switch. Sometimes these business owners don't think about it, and then all of a sudden they wake up one day and they just want to turn the light switch off, and they go from being passionate 100% into the game, and then all of a sudden something starts feeling heavy. Maybe it's a personal situation that's happened, but they literally turn the light switch off. Most of the people that you and I work with, it's more like a dimmer switch. They just don't do it that quick. They do it over time. But what really a lot of them aren't thinking about is, how do I transition myself out of the leadership position, provide other people opportunity to get into that leadership position, so the business is being prepared to transition from a position of strength and not weakness.
People are nervous about stocks and bonds these days. What's the outlook for income real estate? We asked real estate expert Scott Tamkin.
I'm a firm believer that income property will grow wealth over time. And there are parts of Los Angeles where income property is still affordable. The west side of LA doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but there are parts of LA where there are still opportunities. And I firmly believe that, particularly in some of the outlying areas, the gentrification will continue and people will want to rent in those areas, particularly as public transportation expands. People have some extra money. They're looking to invest in income property. I would say good strategy might be to join up with others who are doing the same. There are some crowdfunding sites that offer some opportunities to do that, but I would be careful just jumping in and talk to an expert in the multifamily business. I think over time it will prove to be lucrative.
Protecting your assets is important, but when you do it is even more important. Here's attorney Harry Barth.
A very important component to understand is that, as with all business deals, asset protection being just one of them, is to be able to settle a proposed claim within reasonable limits. It's very, very difficult to do that if you are in jeopardy of losing your home, losing your business, and losing your life savings. So I think that it's important that asset protection is granular. We look at the various components. We take into consideration all of the goals and objectives of our particular clients. And there's not one size fits all. Every situation is different. Every background is different. Every family makeup is different. Every business transaction is different.
What's the best way to use Twitter and other social media? We asked expert Tim Templeton.
I just had a friend ask me today, I don't really get Twitter. What is the value? And I said, you know, it's two things. It's self-promotion, or business promotion in this case, and it's research. So if you want people to know who you are and what you're doing, and you create content, you create blog content, you want people to see it, one of the best ways to get it out in front of people is to send out an announcement using Twitter. Likewise, if you're trying to find people in your ecosystem, your business, the analysts, the resellers, the potential partners, you can find them by their activity on Twitter. You can interact with them, you can follow them, you can retweet things that they're sending, and you can create a relationship that way, which is a lot easier than it used to be.
And now the Exit Coach Radio Show proudly presents the All-Star Review, a compilation of one-minute highlights from past guests. Hear more one-minute highlights and full interviews from these guests at ExitCoachRadio.com.
Of all the things that can happen on the way to the sale of your business, having a deal fall apart because of sloppy financials is probably the worst. Here's expert Addison Adams.
In the sale of a company, you are in a very cooperative process with the other side. If you're the seller of the business and the buyer is coming in and evaluating whether to buy your business, there needs to be a high level of trust there. A trust that you are not only being open and honest about your business and what you know about it, but also credibility that you know what you're talking about. And that when you hand over your financial statements, for example, they're clean, they're correct, they're complete, and they're not misleading. Preferably, they're audited, and not only currently audited, but going back several years. And this is so that there is a confidence that comes in from the point of view of the buyer.
You're the trustee of your company's 401k or profit sharing plan. You have certain responsibilities. What can happen when things go wrong? We ask Buck Blanton.
We have a responsibility when we run qualified plans as a business owner, or in that world we call it a plan sponsor. That person has a responsibility of due care and due loyalty to the participant. And sometimes we forget that when we run plans and we do other things. But as you said, those breaches can become kind of onerous. The 2013 audit year, there were 3,566 audits performed by the Department of Labor, and more than $2.7 billion with a B dollars in fines and penalties were levied. All of those things can be done and levied against corporate officers personally. It's not your corporate seat that might get sued or levied. It's going to be you personally.
What are some of the biggest challenges facing family businesses in their management transition? We ask Transition Consulting Group's David and Paul Karofsky for their thoughts regarding this topic.
As the baby boomers are coming of age and getting a little bit older, as the next generation is starting to get a little bit older and come into that leadership position, this transfer of not only monetary wealth, but you're talking about the businesses, the assets, whatever it might be, there needs to be a plan to transfer that seamlessly. To my dad's point, the more planning you do and you talk about it as to what that transition of ownership looks like, what is that transition of leadership? Those two are not the same. They can be similar in tie, but they can be mutually exclusive as well. But until you really have a plan as to how you transfer that business from one generation to the next, it's very difficult to do it.
When a parent passes away, sometimes dealing with mom or dad's effects can be challenging. Here's senior real estate expert Allison Whitaker.
There's different levels of sorting through things. And so we work with organizers and professional inventory people, estate sale planners. And basically, they come in and they will help you sort, is this a donation pile? Is this a for sale pile? Are these items things that we need to send off to our auction house in London to get appraised and actually auction off? There's different auction houses as well, not just Sotheby's. If it's sports memorabilia, you know, that we would recommend using. There's also that element of, is it a good time to sell the house when it comes to taxes? Taxes are a whole nother conversation, and a lot of times people think, well, the market's up, we should just sell the house, but there could be some tax ramifications depending upon the way the estate has been set up, that maybe it's better to rent it out for a couple years.
Hi everyone, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. You know, one of the biggest questions I get on the show is, what exactly goes into a business exit plan, and when should I start creating mine? Well, I always tell people that the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now, because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know. You can get it free by texting exit plan with no spaces to 44222. That's exit plan to 44222. Again, text exit plan to 44222.
Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Well, hey, everyone. Thanks so much for joining me once again. Hey, it's always great to have guests come back and talk to us and update us about what's going on in their world. And my next guest has been with us before a few times. His name is John Grace, and he's the president of Westlake Financial Advisors. But a lot of people know him by his website, YBPoor.com. www.winbyloseby.com, and they help take the mystery out of money management. Here it is, Win by Losing Less. And one of two local wealth managers, and it's master certified with independent research company HS Dent Advisors Network. It's possible that few investment professionals pay for independent research. Their investment services include wealth management, asset management, retirement planning, financial management, risk management, and retirement income. And John's going to talk about his new book and a new service he's offering for people out there who would be listening. So, John, welcome once again to the show. Thanks so much for joining me.
My pleasure, Bill. Good to be back with you.
John, it's kind of a crazy time now. For those listening in the future, we're back here in November of 2020. We've just had an election, and we don't know the results yet. We're in the midst of COVID. So if you're listening, you know, I replay these shows, John, so if you're listening like 3 to 5 years from now, wow, how did we do? Did we make it? I wonder. But it's been kind of a bizarre and crazy time, and there's a lot to talk about today. So, John, let's get to it. What's been going on with you, and tell us a little bit more about your firm?
Well, you know, what we like to do, Bill, is help people recognize when it makes sense to take your marbles off the table or reposition, okay? And I think what happens so often, and in fact, this was one of the pandemic doctors, Bill, who I thought he put it very well, that the trouble with optimism is that it breeds complacency. And I think that's a true statement. And I think what happens is people are so interested in being so comfortable and putting things back the way they were, they're not prepared for the future. And I think it's useful to at least learn from the Great Depression. In the event, it might happen again. I think that's a genuine possibility. But let's recognize that on a per capita basis, more Americans became millionaires than any other time in history as a result of the Great Depression. So what it seems to me is for those who didn't hold on to equity, and by the way, it took New York real estate, from one source I find, 40 years to get back to even after the Great Depression, a 70% loss. We all know the stock market was off 80, 89%. That took 25 years to get back to even. And let's just notice, while we're paying attention here, that life expectancy for adults in the early 1900s was mid-50s. So what does that suggest?
Right.
It took 20, 25 years, yeah, for stocks to come back, and for decades for New York real estate to come back. Those prices came back long after we were pushing daisies. So to me, it makes sense to kind of look at some of these scenarios, not that they will necessarily repeat themselves, but we might as well act as if, so that we're in preparation. That way, if not so much shock and awe. And by the way, that speaks to the work that you do from the standpoint. We all understand that it makes sense to buy low, sell high. But as I say, sometimes we get so complacent, we don't get there in time, or we get there when the prices have dropped. And the only way you're going to be able to count that money is if you caught that fish. In other words, you sold that highly appreciated fill-in-the-blank at a time when you could get top dollar, as opposed to waking up and discovering now you have to offer it a bargain price just to move what it is you were able to sell at a higher price. And then I think the worst part about that, Bill, is you live with regret. And as I say, when it came to the well-to-do after 1929, you live with regret for the rest of your life. That doesn't sound like fun to me.
Good point. Everything goes through cycles. Business values go through cycles. Stock markets go through cycles. You know, everything goes through cycles. The cycles we're at now are kind of bizarre because some of them are natural cycles, John, and some of those have been, let's say, government created, like, for instance, interest rates being at zero once again.
Yes.
And forcing a lot of people who normally might say, hey, I'd like to allocate a normal allocation. A lot of advisors would say you should be 60-40 stocks to bonds, or 40-60, or 80-20, whatever it happens to be. The problem is they just can't. These days, it seems like a lot of people have been forced into risky investments because interest rates are so low in other normal investments. You can't make any yield in a bank or a bond. And so what's a investor to do? The investors that listen to this show are probably business owners age 50-plus, and they don't necessarily, you know, maybe they have 25 years of life left, certainly, but they don't want to.
Yeah, you don't
want to
worry about it for 25
now.
Years, right?
And that's
right.
Where
well,
you come
I
in, taking kind
of things.
Yeah,
Yeah, we want to make sure that you can recover, that you don't need a Hail Mary pass. So where we focus is on helping clients discover what kind of loss they could live with. In other words, you know, yeah, if it's standard portfolio, let's talk about that a little bit. But let me say this first, that when we talk about losses, many times we just ask investors, are you conservative, moderate, or aggressive? And by the way, this is one of our best clients, a rocket scientist. He says, well, you know, John, I'm a very conservative investor. And I'm looking at his statement going, Vince, your statement is telling me a different story. You're 85% stocks and 15% bonds. I'm going to believe your statement. I hear you, but I'm going to believe your statement. And then you've got $5 million in 4 properties and it's all paid for. So I'm going to submit to you, sir, that you're an aggressive investor. You have little to no diversification. So what we want for people who are in those positions is to limit the losses. In other words, let's find out together, because you don't know and neither do I for you, what kind of loss you can live with. Is it 8%? Can you live with a 40% loss? If it is the case that maybe you went through a 40% loss, but the next time you'd like to limit it to an 8% loss, let's do two things. Go back to see how your portfolio did, first quarter 2019, fourth quarter 2018, 2008. And in many cases, particularly when it comes to 2008, people go, geez, market was off 37, my account was off 42. That was okay then. But I'm going to start taking income. I don't need that to happen again. All right. So now you know, in this case, example, you know it's 8%. Now let's see if we can prepare a portfolio, run it backwards in reality to see how it performed. Oh, look, it was off 7, as an example. Well, that's better than what we expected. That's my point. Let's make sure that, one, you define what kind of loss you can live with, and then, two, can we design the portfolio so that it might perform within your loss parameters. So I can't tell you how important that is. And the second piece of the puzzle is diversify unlike you've ever diversified before. That's what I'm saying. So many people are so comfortable with the way things are and they want them always to go back. But if we look at some of the institutions and the endowments, Yale Endowment as an example, Bill, what I count are 7 different asset classes. And the last time I looked, yeah, the highest percentage was less than 18%. Are you kidding me? Oh, but there's more. The exposure to U.S. stocks, last time I looked, 3%. I didn't say 30. I said 3. How about corporate bonds? How about 4%? 15%, as I recall, to internationals, and I think 11% to real estate. So my point is, notice, they're not taking any big bets. Oh, and by the way, Bill, they didn't take any losses in 2008. I'm not saying this is a template. What I am saying is if we look at the best and the brightest, we see different examples of how to allocate the portfolio to reduce the exposure of those severe losses and maybe see something to the upside, because we were in a place with a modest position where, let's say in 2008, it was up 30% net after all costs. Well, that would have helped abate the losses in the houses and the commercial real estate and the bonds and the stocks. So diversification and then active management.
John, great points as far as the different asset allocation, asset classes, 7 asset classes. That's a tremendous number. And one question I would have for you is, how often should people be looking these days? How often should they be coming back and say, hey, John, things are, you know, we've just had political potential changes. We have interest rate changes. We have a market that just doesn't know when to quit. How often should they be coming in and re-looking at those allocations these days? Should they be more nimble in the past, where Warren Buffett used to say, all you need is the S&P 500 in 20 years?
Right. No, we've got to be more nimble. I mean, I'm submitting that this COVID thing is a disaster of epic proportions, and we do not know yet how it's unfolding. But clearly, it's not done with us, and clearly, it's changing things as we speak. So that's my point. What used to work isn't working anymore, and I'm afraid it won't work again. But that's why we want to have more places that we put some of the, you know, have 7 legs underneath our portfolio stool as opposed to 2 or 3. And then you review it as often as you need. I want folks to feel like I know what I'm doing and I know what I'm doing and I know why I'm doing what I'm doing, okay? And that way you review it as often as you as is comfortable with you. Some people need 4 times a year. Some people it's 2 times a year. Some people it's once a year. But when we can go back, you know, like I was talking to another rocket scientist, and she says, geez, this was first quarter, right, when the market was off from February 19th through March 23rd, what, 30%, 35%? She says, John, this is this is just terrible. I've never seen anything like this. And so this was a Sunday, and I said, let me call you tomorrow. And I said, you don't remember 2000, 2002, 2008 when the markets were off 50%. So actually, you have seen something like this. But let's look at your account, because apparently you're looking at the news, and I want you to look at your account. How is it doing? Let's go look in real time. And now I see that in your case, the way things are set up, you're off approximately 8%. She goes, well, that's not so bad. I go, well, that's why I want you to see your number as opposed to get mesmerized by the news and worrying about something that doesn't pertain to you.
Good point. Really good point. So, you know, one question I wanted to ask you was that with COVID and all the changes in the last year, were there any things that you were surprised by as far as investments doing well that you didn't think would do well or investments not doing well? What any surprises that you saw in the last, let's say, year that you thought, wow, that's I would not have seen that coming?
Well, there's one happening right now, Bill, that's kind of interesting because, you know, there was supposed to be a blue wave and maybe that has dissipated. It's not going to happen. But history suggests that the markets absolutely love a divided Congress. So it doesn't matter which way it's divided. And by the way, many people would assume that a Republican administration, the markets do better by a very, very slim margin. The history suggests that it's actually the reverse. Markets do better at a Democrat administration. Now, Republicans say that's because we have to clean up their mess, but, you know, these things change, and that's what I'm saying, that who knew that tech was going to take off like it did? And it looks like, in terms of presidents, in terms of which stocks are going to be more in favor or not, the growth stocks seem to do well under a Trump administration. I think we'll see value stocks do well under a Biden administration. So, yeah, we have to be, you used a good word, agile. We want to be like those palm trees in the Hawaiian winds, where they don't break, they just fold from side to side, and then they snap back. But they generally don't become unrooted. And that's my real concern, that I think a lot of folks are not prepared for what's around the corner. I think things will get nasty, and it has nothing to do with the election or the administration or who's in power. Let's look at it this way, Bill. It blows my mind every time I think about it. Globally, there are now more people 65 and older than 5 and younger. We've never been here before. So just to think it's going to be the way it was when we are in uncharted territory on more than one front, given the age of which most of us are and this COVID thing that seems not to be going anywhere anytime soon, there's no place to hide. So that's why we want to make sure that we limit our exposure to risk, we understand how much loss we can accept, and then to the extent that our portfolio is holding up within those loss parameters, you can sleep well, you can have a nice day, as opposed to worrying about your money.
Yeah, really good point. And I think a lot of economists are starting to say, hey, okay, we're done predicting the next couple years. Let's look out the next 10 years. There's some severe storms on the horizon as all the baby boomers in the U.S. and around the world start taking money back from the government and are not replaced by a significant number of workers supporting those payments. So who's going to pay all that money? Well, it's going to come back the taxpayers, and also a lot of borrowed capital at the government level is going to start requiring some repayment and interest rates down the road. So is that what you're looking at when you're talking about the potential for a Great Depression, just the amount of government income that's already spoken for in the future?
Well, I have a couple of good sources. Harry did research, and Michio Kaku, an astrophysicist, and I had a chance to meet him and talk with him. And by the way, if you meet him or you see him, you're like, boy, I've never met an astrophysicist, but you look like the textbook version. You've got to be the picture behind that word, okay? And what both of them said, and they have not collaborated because I talked with both about the other, they said, look, if we look at the history, it's just a pattern that there's a depression every 80 to 90 90 years. And the way Dr. Kaku put it, he says, we were absolutely on track for Depression 2 in 2008. We kicked that can down the road. We're not going to miss that experience. I wish it had happened in 2008. By virtue of it being then, we would have worked through it by now. And let's also understand, now we are, what, 10 to 12 years older than we were then, so we don't have the same occasion to have enough time to recover like we have before. But that's part of what I'm saying. You know, it's not about the prediction as far as I'm concerned, Bill. It's more about the preparation. Is there going to be a depression 2 minutes, 2 years from now? I don't know. But here's another way to look at it. Peak spending happens in America at age 47. So part of what we've learned by paying for this independent research is that a lot of things happen based around age as opposed to what we think in terms of sales, for example. And just to give you a very basic example, Americans typically consume the most potato chips at age 14. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, you go back to middle school, and I can go back to middle school, and I can remember every day. I had to have Lay's barbecue potato chips. And on the weekend, it was two or three bags. But now it's like, what, one potato chip a year? And the other side of that equation is, yeah, as a parent, guess what? You bought the most potato chips in life when you had a 14-year-old in your household, which is the average age of that combination. So, again, you're not eating them. You're not buying them. I'm just saying that a lot of things are driven by demographics. 31 is the age at which most Americans buy their first house. 41 is the biggest. Guess what's coming? 78 is the age, according to the Census Bureau, that most Americans sell their homes. They're over and out, mm-hmm, on average 78, 79. And mm-hmm, some people say, well, I don't think that's going to happen. Well, let's just understand what will happen. One way or the other, we're coming out of those houses. Either under your own power, or you're going to be carted out, because it's about 80, 85 that we typically go to heaven. So one way or the other, we're coming out. And let's just recognize this. You know, let's look at it from a very basic way. If 24% of the population, 76 million Americans born 1946 to 1964, spend about 20 years to go to heaven, and the inventory of real estate, for example, stays the same, and there's no reason it would not change, or that it would change, okay? What happens to prices? I'm going to submit we're going to be back to what happened in the Great Depression. Prices go down of residential real estate as well as rent. And who's prepared for that when you are, you know, when you own real estate and you rent it out, when you're a landlord? You've only seen prices go up. You've only seen, for the most part, rents go up. You're not prepared for that kind of reversal of fortunes to happen. I think it's going to be like being on that carousel. At some point, the music will stop, and I mean worldwide, and we're all going to have to get off the carousel.
Really good points, John. It's always fun to talk to you, and I know I want to talk a little bit about your new book, which is called Making Finance Make Sense. Did I get that right?
You sure did. Yes, it's available at Amazon, just came out, and it's Kindle or paperback. And by the way, I found out, you know, what do they say, it better be lucky than good. Apparently the new flavor of books is under 100 pages. We're under 100 pages, so I'm really pleased about that. And let me mention, too, Bill, that as a way of saying thank you to these frontline workers who put so much on the line, they put their lives on the line, and they don't have the luxury of being able to work from home, right? So they give so much and receive so little. We made a decision that we were going to offer free financial planning to all frontline workers as a way of saying we want to support you in a way that we can, like you support us in the beautiful way that you do.
That's terrific. That's a great give back. And it's something that, of course, everybody can use these days to try to figure out the best ways to save, allocate, and protect. And what's the best way for listeners, John, to get in touch with you to take advantage of those services and to find the book?
Sure. Well, you mentioned our site, Why Be Poor. Those are three words, WHYBEPOOR. Books available at Amazon. You can send an email to contact@whybepoor.com or give us a call at 805-495-2077, and we'll book a time. Some people want to come into the office. That's fine. Others want to be on Zoom. Typically, in about 90 minutes, we'll put together a plan in place, again, at no charge, where you can see what your goal is to make work optional, what happens in the event there is a loss of a breadwinner. They go to heaven, and now you're trying to hold up this platform of all this stuff and all these things and all these people, and they're come crumbling down. We want to have enough money in the equation so you can say, well, I'm going to miss miss you, but I'm not going to miss your money because I've secured my future. And then, of course, we've got some college planning for people who have these kids that they're trying to educate without going into a lot of debt.
That's great. So these days, using virtual technology, if that's desired, and a lot of people do desire that these days, they in 90 minutes they can put together a plan with you. And if they're frontline workers, first responders, and others, then you'll even take care of them for free. And you have the book, Making Finance Make Sense. A lot going on with you, John, and really appreciate you taking time out of your busy day to update us on what you see. And you explain things so nicely and clearly that I think everybody should really be looking at buying Making Finance Make Sense, not only for themselves but for others who they might want to give it to. Christmas is coming. Hey,
well, yeah,
there you go.
Christmas
There's a good
is
idea.
Coming. It's a great gift. It gives us something to talk about. It's a pretty easy read. That's the way it was written because I'm not trying to impress the PhDs. I'm trying to get more people into the equation of taking the steps necessary to go, well, maybe I can do this. And now maybe the good news is COVID has given me the time to do this so I can. I'm not distracted by work and having to drive all over the country. Maybe I can take an hour and then look at it once a year or whatever it takes for you, but to make sure, you know, we did one bill real quick. They're 35, making 100 grand. She's making 60. He's making 40. They haven't done much in the way of savings. We give credit for the little pension, and also there's some Social Security in the equation. But the point is, now they see their goal is $2.6 million. And that means they want to reach that goal by age 70. They have about 35 years to get there. What it means is setting aside 15%, $15,000 from 100, getting a 7% return in 35 years. We've got 2.6. Now we know we have put behind door number one the kind of assets we need so that for the next 20 or 30 years, we have the equivalent income without having to go to work to bring home the same kind of money adjusted for inflation and taxes.
People that know their goals are much better off than people that don't, and they can really plan. They can decide, well, maybe we need to cut back if we can't save that much. They can make those decisions, but it's really great to be able to clearly see what it looks like and what they need to be doing. So you give people great peace of mind in that way, John. Thanks so much for joining me once again, and I look forward to the next time we get a chance to speak.
I do as well, Bill. We'll see you then.
And thank you for listening today. Really pleasure to have you with me. We're going to sign off right now, but again, we'll see you next time on Exit Coach Radio.
Hey, everybody. It's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. One of the questions I get asked the most is, how do I grow the value of my business? I'm so busy working in it, I need to work on it. So we've created a special report for you on 10 tips to grow the value of your business. Just text the word DRIVERS to 44222 to get a special free report right to your inbox. That's DRIVERS to 44222. Text DRIVERS to 44222.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.
Hi, everyone. It's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. You know, one of the biggest questions I get on the show is, what exactly goes into a business exit plan, and when should I start creating mine? Well, I always tell people that the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now, because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know. You can get it free by texting exit plan with no spaces to 44222. That's exit plan to 44222. Again, text exit plan to 44222.
Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.